Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus. How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our True Crime Podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Cam, how are you?
I'm fine and dandy. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
That
on
sounds
this very rainy day. I love it.
I love it. I love rain. Rain makes me happy. Rainy
just
days and Mondays always make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that.
Mondays make you happy?
No, rainy days and Mondays always make me happy. Remember, rainy days and Mondays always make me blue. No, I hate Mondays, but it didn't work
to go
if
with
I didn't
joke.
Say it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, had to all go together. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just needs to get a little bit colder. Now that we've entered October,
right?
It needs to get cold. I'm ready for, I don't want to be hot anymore. I want to be cold.
You're hot all the time, Jen. You're hot all the time.
I know. It's a curse.
All right. What do you got for us today?
Well, today I am doing a little case that I did over with CJ at Beyond the Rainbow.
Beyond the Rainbow.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that I thought I would share here
mm-hmm.
with us.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching it on a TV show years ago, and it has always stuck with me, so
Ooh.
I thought I'd do it again.
Heck yeah. Let's have it. I'm excited.
All right, are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Cam, today we're going to go back to the mid-80s.
My favorite.
I know. This is when we were kind of in our young mid-teens. The Police Academy 2, remember that movie?
Oh, heck yeah, I do.
It was a box office smash of this year and holding on to number one at the box office for 4 weeks straight. We Are the World by USA for Africa. Remember that video?
We are the world.
That was the number one song in the 1985, the year that we're discussing in.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Coca-Cola released their biggest debacle ever, New Coke.
Which was terrible.
It only lasted a whole 3 months before they pulled it off the shelf and went back
good.
To the old
They should have. Mm-hmm. You got to stay with what works. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And as for fashion, women's hair was as high as a stockbroker on Wall Street.
Ooh, ba-dum-bum.
Ba-dum-bum. Lots of cocaine in the little Wall Street, but who am I to judge? Anyway, got to keep on it, right?
Keep on it. Keep on keeping on.
Stephen Aldridge, 27 years old, and 37-year-old Maureen Mickey McDermott were pretty much inseparable from the moment they met through mutual friends at a gay bar called the In Touch Lounge in Van Nuys, California.
Mm.
Mickey was 10 years older than Stephen, but they both were very gregarious people, and they both loved to be the center of attention. Stephen and Mickey both had similar upbringings. Mickey was born in New Jersey in 1947, and she was raised a Catholic. She and her three brothers went to Catholic school from kindergarten through eighth grade. And now Mickey's family didn't have much money, so she had to quit school in the 10th grade to help out with finances. I believe her father liked to spend money on drink a little bit more than spend money on anything else.
On things he should spend it on.
Exactly. It happens to the best of us.
It does.
But anyway, as soon as Mickey could, she escaped to where? L.A.
L.A.
The land of dreams.
Pretty people.
Mm-hmm. In L.A., she got her GED, and then she went to school to become a nurse. And she loved being a nurse. She was a respiratory therapist. She loved it. Not only that, she was well-loved at the hospital that she worked at. So born in 1957, Stephen grew up in Anaheim, California. He and his three siblings were sent to a parochial school from kindergarten through eighth grade. They lived right down the road from Disneyland. Can you imagine? That's a dream.
No, you probably never go.
I'd never go, no. Stephen even was an altar boy. After Stephen graduated college, he started his own landscaping business, and he was just getting it off the ground when he met Mickey. Now, Mickey hung out with a group of women from Beverly Hills who had money, and while Mickey was working hard, she wasn't pulling in the kind of money that they were. And you'd never know it, because Mickey dressed lavishly and spent money just as freely as her friends. It was getting to the point where, even with her part-time job as a private nurse for Lee Laportes, she was having trouble paying the mortgage of her house. So one night, when Stephen and Mickey were together, Mickey told Stephen that she and another nurse were planning to go to Saudi Arabia to work for a short period of time to make some extra money. Being a travel nurse really does bring in good cash, especially nowadays, but I digress. Stephen mentioned that some of his tools had gotten stolen where he was living. And that's when Mickey said that she thought Stephen should move in and looked after the house and her animals while she was away.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey loved her animals. She brought in a lot of strays. So Stephen moved in. And after a while of living there, Stephen suggested that he could possibly buy into the house and it might be a great idea for both of them. He would give her $10,000, and that would make him part owner of the house. Mickey wasn't a big fan of this agreement at first, but she decided, you know what, that it probably was perfect because not only did Mickey need the money, the house needed a lot of work. And Stephen, he was just the guy to do it. His father was a general contractor, and he had taught all the kids everything they needed to know, how to fix anything they ever needed to fix. Like from plumbing to rewiring electric, Stephen could do it all. We need one of those around this house.
I was just thinking that.
In December of 1984, Stephen suggested that they take out a $100,000 life insurance policy together.
Mm-mm.
Just in case something were to happen if Mickey did go overseas.
Nope.
You know, or if something would happen to him, both of them wouldn't be stuck with having to pay the house alone, right? So it seemed like a good idea at the time. It always does.
No, it never does. So, if anybody wants to go in on a life insurance policy on your life, no.
It's a slippery slope. I'll just leave it there. It's a slippery slope. But they decided they were all in it. They went it. Papers were signed. Everyone was happy. By February of 1985, things between these two friends start to sour.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys shocked?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stephen was the kind of guy who liked to keep the house neat and tidy. Mickey? Yeah, she wasn't. she was like a lot of messy. And plus, Stephen was aggravated about the animals. Like I said before, Mickey rescued animals and had many in her home. And although Stephen never hurt the animals, he was frustrated because the dogs would bark nonstop and Mickey never cleaned up after them. Which is always, that's
that
not cool.
That would be infuriating.
Oh, especially when you're trying to make the house look nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have somebody that doesn't. It's like having kids, but Mickey's 10 years older. You know, it would drive you insane.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen started bringing up how they needed to get the house in shape and they needed to flip it. He thought that they could both make a lot of money doing this. And of course, Mickey, she hated the idea. And it would always cause a fight every time he would bring it up. But every time they did fight, the tension would always blow over. On the night of March 21st, 1985, Mickey and Steven had gone out to dinner and drinks at the In Touch Lounge gay bar, where they were mending fences from a previous fight. And they both had a great time. Later in that night, Steven told Mickey, you know what, I'm just ready to go home. But Mickey wasn't ready to, so she just told him to go ahead and go home. And she'd be home within the hour. Luckily for Steven, the In Touch Lounge was right around the corner from their house, so Steven just walked home. Not long after he got home, there was a knock on the door. As Steven opened the door, a Hispanic and a black man rushed in and threatened him with a knife. One of the men ordered Steven to strip down and crawl on his hands and knees to the bedroom, then lie face down on the bed. On the bed, the man took the knife and cut Steven on the buttock, one of the cheeks, I guess, and yelled gay slurs at him while the other attacker got a 2-foot-long bedpost and hit Steven over the head.
Ugh.
Luckily for Steven, he was able to jump up and run outside. The attackers followed, but were scared off by one of Mickey's barking dogs. The only thing that the attackers left with was $35 in cash. 911 was called, and Steven was taken to the hospital and interviewed. LAP police officer David Yates, one of the officers that checked out the crime scene, said the house was, quote, not consistent with a robbery. It wasn't ransacked, nor anything was stolen except for the $35. And Mickey, of course, immediately assumed that it was probably one of Steven's scorned lovers. Seems that Steven brought many different men home. Oh. And it kind of annoyed Mickey. Police just didn't really say anything much about it. They never solved it, just went about their business. But a lot of the friends of Steven and Mickey said that these attackers may have saw Steven coming out of the gay bar and followed him home.
Mm-hmm. That's you know, what I would think.
Gay bashing was certainly common, unfortunately, at that time. Steven was badly beaten up, and this, of course, made him unable to work for a few weeks. And Mickey, being the caregiver she was, nursed him back to health. While Mickey could help fix Steven's wounds on the outside, she couldn't fix the PTSD that he suffered. Steven started to obsess about Mickey and his safety. I mean, hate crimes, gay hate crimes were, like I said, very popular, and both of them could have been attacked at any moment.
Right.
Steven started to go nuts around this house. He started reinforcing the windows and all the locks, and he did everything he could do to keep the two safe. He even went so far as to purchase a shotgun. Since Steven wasn't working, he wasn't bringing in any money, and we all know that money is both their big concerns. And now that the hospital bills were piling up, and he discovered that he needed a new truck since his older one had died on him, basically, the money was getting really, really tight. And Mickey was getting worried, too. And of course, her spending habits hadn't changed. She was still bringing in less than she was paying out. Mm-hmm. And so she started to take extra shifts at the hospital. At this point, Steven really started pushing Mickey to sell the house. They were both so far into debt, and it just seemed like the best way out. Mm-hmm. Mickey, of course, hated the idea of selling her house. She didn't want to do it at all, like at all. And I can kind of see her point. She came from nothing.
Yeah.
And then she bought this house. So I can understand that point, but they didn't have the money for it.
Right.
And obviously, this caused a ton of tension between the two.
I was just going to say, you get in over your head, and really, it's terrible, but that's what you have to do, you know?
And it's heart-wrenching.
You're never going to be able to.
There's only so many hours a day you can work and exactly. make money. And if you're not changing your spending habits, I, for one, know I was in debt in my early 20s thanks to this devils of credit card debt.
Psychic hotline you used to call.
That and credit cards. Hello. They're the devil.
They are the devil.
They really are. And when you're in your 20s, man.
Well, it's like free money.
I'm still a shopaholic, but still. Anyway.
Yeah.
On the night of April 28th, 1985, Mickey decided she needed to go away. She needed to get a break from Steven. She decided that she was going to take a bath and then head to Palm Springs to see a friend. Now, I don't know if this was a girlfriend of hers, a lover, or just a platonic friend. I'm not for sure.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter, to be honest. Around 8:15, as Mickey was walking into her bedroom from pouring her bath in the tub, she encountered three men in masks. The men pushed her down on the ground and with a knife cut her breast and inner thigh. They also kicked or hit her in the head, which made her lose consciousness, and they tied her up. When she finally came to, she was able to free herself and call 911. The ambulance came and she was immediately taken to the hospital. And after they examined her, she was told that her roommate, Stephen Eldridge, was dead.
Aww.
Stephen had been found in his bedroom with 44 stab wounds.
44?
44.
It's personal. Okay, go ahead.
28 of those alone were fatal, just by themselves. The men that had attacked him had also cut off his penis, which was never found.
What?
And they said later that they cut his penis off after he had died. It was post-mortem.
That's horrific.
Mickey was questioned a lot over the next several weeks. Police wanted to believe that Mickey was telling them the truth, but there was just something that didn't add up. They had some circumstantial evidence, like the bathwater that Mickey poured was still in the tub. And then when the police came into the house, the water was still fairly warm, like warmer than it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Side note, none of this was tested, by the way. It's just like a theory. Police then went and started at the very, very beginning and looked over the reports from the very first attack that happened in March. Now, just like the first attack, this wasn't a robbery gone wrong. Stephen was wearing his gold chain and watch when his body was found. The house hadn't looked like it'd been ransacked, and things like cameras, television, and stereos were still there, right where they should be. And if this was a gay bashing, why did Mickey only have superficial wounds? Why was Stephen brutally murdered when Mickey was barely left bleeding?
Mm-hmm. Got some questions.
Mm-hmm. Police started looking even harder into Mickey. So they went to the hospital where she worked. The detective spoke to all her coworkers, and no one had a bad thing to say about her. They said she was such an excellent nurse, and she was very hardworking. She was kind, generous, caring, very compassionate. And no one thought Mickey would bring harm to anyone. When they asked if she had any close friends at the hospital, all the coworkers gave the same name, Jimmy Luna.
Uh-oh.
Jimmy Luna was a gay Hispanic man that had worked as an orderly for the hospital. Knowing that the man from the first attack was described as being Hispanic, the detectives zoned in on him. Jimmy Luna was born in Los Angeles on May 7th, 1953, to two heroin addicts who abandoned him as a baby. He was raised by relatives who never really wanted or cared for him, and he was horrifically abused emotionally, physically, and sexually. As an adult, Jimmy went from committing minor crimes to major crimes. There were many arrests, many suicide attempts, and drug overdoses in his past. He was hired at the hospital through an affirmative action program. He was known at the hospital as a liar, and he was abusive towards some of the staff and even the patients. He stalked people and told a psychotherapist he sometimes felt uncomfortable rage and that he was compelled to beat up his girlfriend.
Mm.
He's a good guy.
That's not good. That's not good.
Jimmy was always broke and always asked to borrow money from his coworkers, which they never saw ever again. He never paid him back. Employees would complain about Jimmy's odd and violent behavior, but it was near impossible to fire him because of the affirmative action program. Plus, he was a member of the union. And I'm not dogging any of those things, by the way. Finally, in 1985, the hospital was able to fire him because of his abuse towards patients. Like, he would throw things at patients in the hospital. And they were able to...
I would say that's not good bedside manner. Call me crazy. Well,
He was an orderly, and orderlies are very important, but they're not doctors or nurses. But still, you, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't throw things at people in your job, especially people that are sick.
Or ever, really, hopefully. Yeah.
But they were able to fire him because he was found to have lied about his criminal records on his application. The only person that stuck to Jimmy's side was Mickey. She would always give him money when no one else would. And remember, Mickey did like to take in strays.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
On May 23rd, 1985, Jimmy was taken into custody for questioning. But he would only be held for 72 hours. Then on July 2nd, 1985, Jimmy was arrested for the first-degree murder of Stephen Eldridge. I'm unsure how they got him on this, but piecing different bits of information together, I think they got Jimmy because one of the men that helped attack Stephen, Marvin mm-hmm. Lee, was in custody of the police for a different offense, and he was offered immunity for his confession and truthful testimony.
Oh.
By July 12th, Jimmy implicated Mickey of the murder, and in August, she was arrested. Later, the prosecution would give Jimmy a deal. If he testified against Mickey, the death sentence would be taken off the table.
Oh.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's go through what really happened on the night of April 28th.
Yes, let's.
And I got this straight from the court case, People versus McDermott.
Mm.
Near the end of February 1985, Mickey discussed with Jimmy about killing Stephen. She told Jimmy that she had an insurance policy on Stephen's life and that she wanted him dead. She offered Jimmy $50,000 to kill Stephen, and he agreed. Mickey told Jimmy to stab Stephen because a gun would make too much noise and to make sure it looked like a, quote, homosexual murder.
Ugh.
Mickey thought the police would not investigate the murder of a gay man like they would other murders, and she's not really that wrong. She also suggested on different occasions that Mickey carve out the word, quote, gay on the body or maybe cut off his penis.
Oh.
On three separate occasions in late February and early March 1985, Mickey arranged for Jimmy to be at the house so Jimmy could kill Stephen. Each time, however, Jimmy became scared and couldn't go through with it. Mickey then told Jimmy to find someone to help him kill Stephen, but she told him she didn't want anyone but Jimmy to know that she was involved. That's when Jimmy offered $3,000 to his friend Marvin Lee to, quote, watch his back, because an organization wanted Jimmy to murder someone and make it look like a, quote, homosexual murder. So now he's saying that he's hired by an organization. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The mob.
Yeah.
It's really Mickey, who's pretty much a... The next day after the first failed attempt, the first attack, Mickey called Jimmy saying, quote, we're going to have to do it again. And this time you can't fail.
Mm.
And she basically told him to hire more men. On the day of the murder, April 28th, 1985, Jimmy met Marvin and his brother Dondell Lee, and Jimmy offered Dondell money to help with the murder. Jimmy then called Mickey, and she told Jimmy that she would leave a front bedroom window open for entry into the house. And Jimmy needs to tie her up, cut or hit her somehow so she would look like a robbery victim.
Ugh.
Around 8 p.m., Jimmy, Marvin, and Dondell entered the house through the front bedroom window. Jimmy went down the hall to Mickey's bedroom. And there, Mickey told him that Stephen hadn't been gotten home yet. Mickey then told Jimmy to cut her on the breast and inner thigh, which he did. And this would make it seem that Stephen was killed when he came home while Mickey was being robbed. And that's kind of what it did look like, but nobody robbed anything.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen came home at around 10:30, and as he came into the house, Dondell Lee met him with Stephen's own rifle that he had bought for protection. Marvin Lee grabbed Stephen in a chokehold and dragged him down the hall where Jimmy stabbed him until Jimmy was dead on the floor. Jimmy then returned to Mickey's bedroom, where he found Mickey lying on the floor with a deep, deep bruise on her face. A hematoma, if you will.
It's terrible.
Mickey asked Jimmy how it looked, how's her injury looked, and she then proceeded to tell him that she had been banging her head on the table in the bedroom for her own wound. That's psychotic.
It really is. Oof.
Then, as Jimmy and the two brothers were about to leave the house, Marvin Lee claims he overheard Mickey yell from the back bedroom to not forget to cut off Stephen's penis.
Ugh.
Mickey went back and did just that, then placed the body part in his own pocket and took it home.
Ugh.
And there he carried it into the bathroom and flushed it down the toilet.
No way. Really?
Horrible.
Would that even work? Yes, it did.
It did.
Oh, boy.
So here's a little side note. Here's some little fun facts also found out about Mickey here. She had that night job with the Laportes, right? I think that's how you say it. If not, I apologize. Mickey got the job because she filled in for one of the caretakers that they had. They had three night nurses, and one of them got like a DUI or something like that. And so while he was in jail for a couple months, she actually did part-time work for them. Mm-hmm. Well, she really wanted to work there more, right? She liked working there. So she told Jimmy that she wanted one of these shifts at the Laporte's house.
Mm-hmm.
Laporte's house. So Mickey offered Jimmy money to beat up one of the regular caretakers, Dwayne Bell. And Jimmy did. He attacked Dwayne in his home and he slashed his face, his chest, his throat. But not only did Dwayne survive, he returned to work for the Laportes. Mickey, not liking that, then had Jimmy constantly call the house. And when the wife would answer the phone, Jimmy would make threats against Dwayne. And this, of course, scared her. And that's what made Dwayne lose his job. And then Mickey stepped in and took his place as a full-time caretaker.
Hmm.
And then another man that worked with Mickey at the house, Philip LaChance, he testified in court that in September or October of 1984, Mickey told him that she was broke and desperately needed money to pay bills. And she discussed ways for Philip to steal a ring from Betty, the wife, so that they could sell it. Mickey also asked Philip, who handled Betty's, the wife's, banking, to maybe get a check signed from Lee, her husband,
mm-hmm.
so they could, quote, clear out the checking account. She was that desperate for money.
Well, to murder your friend, your,
it's
quote,
bad.
Friend,
yeah.
I would say probably does not get much more desperate.
No, but she tried other ways to get money. And finally, she resorted to murder, is what I'm trying to say. I mean, it escalated there.
Hmm.
So
you could have just sold the house. There's that.
You could have.
Okay.
There's just that.
Why?
Why do anything illegal, right? So Mickey was convicted by a jury of one count of murder and one count of attempted murder, and she was sentenced to death. Many people, including Mickey, still claim that she's innocent. They say there wasn't any hard evidence, and what convicted her was the testimony of a known liar. Mickey has been filing appeals whenever she can. Each one has upheld her sentence. The last one I found was in 2017. And to be honest, I'm not even sure if she's alive today. I can't find anything by looking her up. She's at some correctional facility somewhere in California. I knew the name and I forgot to write it down. I apologize. I tried looking her up there, couldn't find anything, but she's probably around 73 or so now.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I can't find anything else on her.
Mm-hmm.
Also interesting, I want to add, is the prosecutor in the first trial was Catherine Matter. She is the lawyer that defended Angelo Bueno, one of the Hillside Stranglers.
Oh,
She then went on to become a Supreme Court judge in a felony courtroom for 19 years. She just retired early last year, 2020, and she just published a book last year called Inside the Robe, A Judge's Candid Tale of Criminal Justice in America.
Oh, interesting.
She seems like a really interesting woman, by the way. I kind of want to buy her book and read it.
I would.
I've got a lot of time.
Well,
yeah, I mean, she's...
And nothing else to read or do.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I got you.
Mm-hmm. But she's tried some big cases, so yeah.
Interesting. Well, that was... There's times that you're desperate for money, but to ever kill somebody just... And that's
especially
your friend. Like, that's your friend.
Friend. It
that's
is your friend.
Crazy. They're like missing a... It's like a little synapse in their brain or something where it's just...
Their wiring's wrong.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, she's... I mean, everybody loved her, too. That's what's so... And,
well,
and technically, she didn't kill anybody, but she always had people do her bidding. So she's like the definition of an evil villain, right?
I mean, totally.
Or a Disney villain, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
I don't get it either.
There's so much things she could have done other than kill her friend.
Sell the house. You know, sell the house and move in with a different friend.
Well,
for a while.
I think because she partied with the rich Beverly Hills women who, one account said that these women were closeted.
Yeah, probably in the 80s. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, she was trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she always dressed. She had the finest clothes, jewelry, and she had the house in Van Nuys.
I guess that was embarrassing for her, too.
Right.
To
admit that she can't. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
She was trying to keep up, and she just couldn't do it on a nurse's salary.
Well, shame on you.
So, yeah, it's not a nurse's salary and part-time.
Yeah. Well.
That she illegally gained. Or ill-gotten gain, I should say.
There you go. That was good.
Case has always stuck with me. I think it was because of just the...
Because you were afraid that maybe I'd do that to you someday?
No, but I mean, it's just like, how could you do that to a friend? I don't know. I don't know why it stuck with me that...
Plus...
To be that callous, I guess.
If there's one thing that we know, Jen, you can't hire people to do your work because... You know,
and then have them contract people out? No.
Yeah, it's just, that's just not, we're not getting new flooring in the kitchen. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I don't know why, but that case has always stuck with me. And I saw it years ago.
Was it Forensic Files or something or what?
I remember I watched it. It was like, I killed my BFF or something like that because I just rewatched it.
Mm.
But like I said, it just always has...
Well, it's disturbing.
Me.
Just all for money, too. Not even jealousy or anything like that. Just money. Just needed the money.
That's like so callous. Mm-hmm. And she was pissed off at him because he wanted to sell the house. And that was what would ease her problem.
Mm-hmm.
He was not being... I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, have you been watching The Only Murders in the Building with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez?
No, but it's on my list. It's on my,
I love
my
it.
My TV
I
watching
hate...
days are not like they were, Jen.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You've been...
I gotta get back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, yeah.
That's pretty much the only thing I have been watching, and it's episodic.
Yes.
And so I have to wait weekly, and
same.
I don't like that very much. But
I might
do
wait
need to
then.
Catch up on this past week.
I might wait.
I do like Selena. I think she's very cute.
She's adorable, right? I think she's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
She's
I can't believe she's 30. I remember watching her on with the kids when we would watch Barney.
The Witches of Waverly Place? Oh.
And The Witches of Waverly Place.
Yeah.
Yes, but she was one of the Barney girls with Demi Lovato.
Yeah.
But yes, Witches of Waverly Place. My girls loved that.
So did my kids.
And then they were so upset with her when she was dating Justin Bieber. Because they loved Justin Bieber.
Me too.
But I've always had a crush on Steve Martin. I've always loved him. I remember sneaking into my brother's room and putting on his Wild and Crazy Guy 8-track tape that Steve Martin did.
Wild and Crazy. Yeah.
And just
thought
it was the
70s.
Funniest thing, even though I didn't understand a lot of things that he was talking about. I still
probably
thought it
still
was
don't.
Just the best. I don't really.
always
goes over my head.
But anyway, so you're not watching much of anything?
No, I started watching The Many Saints of Newark, which is the prequel to The Sopranos series, and I love it so far. I'm about halfway through. I paused to come and do this. I'm going to rewatch it again because there's so many. I was a diehard Sopranos fan. In fact, I think Dexter and The Sopranos are the only two television series that I've watched multiple times all the way through. So there's so many of the characters in there. I need to rewatch it to kind of pick up all that stuff. So I'm going to watch it again because that's what I do. That's what I do. But yeah, it's that little James Gandolfini's son plays the young Tony Soprano, and he's pretty amazing.
Is he amazing?
Yeah.
He's got
a baby face, big time baby face. So.
I always loved Tony Soprano.
I know you did.
I know. Just
loved
him.
Like love the loved.
Love. No, that's, yeah. It's
like
kind of,
I want to marry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's just something, I guess that's my girls love their daddy type thing. You always like, you know.
Daddy that
the
will
men
kill you
I grew up
and
around.
Bury the body.
Well, not exactly mafia, but looks wise. You know what I mean?
I got
bulky
you.
Bulky men, balding hair.
A little thick.
You know?
They call it thick now, Jen.
Thick
with
yes.
two C's.
I don't know. I just always thought he was nice.
The bee's knees.
And we're still waiting for Brian Laundry to be found.
Ugh.
As of recording today on October 2nd, I believe. Not found, but I will say that Joseph Petito, I believe that's her father, put out a tweet today saying that she, meeting Gabby, is already saving lives. So many stories being sent to us about relationships being left with proper planning for safety, and people are being found due to her influence. We have much more work to do, but it's a start. It hit me right today.
Their heart. Seriously.
I know.
I mean, if there's anything that can come out of this that would be positive, it's that, and then other people won't fall because of domestic abuse and things
exactly.
like that. Yeah,
exactly.
All right, Jen. Well, that was an excellent case, as always. And we are still busy recording, so we're off to do another one right now. But until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Jen. For more information about this episode, as well as all other sources, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by the hosts, Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all Our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. You can reach Nico at WeTalkOfDreams.com. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from Octoberpod VHS. You can find all of his great works on YouTube. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter with the handle at Our True Crime Pod. You can also email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. We would also at this time like to thank our patrons. We would be so lost without you. Thank you so much. And if you would like to help support the show, you can check us out on patreon.com/ourtruecrimepodcast. You can also show your support by leaving a 5-star review on Apple or simply just tell your friends about us. It's that easy. Love ya.
Record.
Hi, Nico.
Hey, Nico, buddy. How are you?
He's great.
I wish. I hope he's sitting back drinking a tea and having a biscuit. Enjoying
life. Tea and biscuit.
Yeah, you can stop with the accents.
I love that. It's what I do. I can't help
it. Okay.
It's true.
It's what you do. Do it.
I know I do do it. I do do it.
You do do.
All right. You want to count us down?
Yep.
Get this organized here. Okay.
Now, I keep saying now, and I don't mean to.
I say that all the time, Jen.
I know.
It's a segue.
It is. It's like, we went through. Yeah.
And so.
His father was a general contact. His Stephen's father had been his general. Stephen's father had been a general. Jesus,
what was Stephen's father? What was Stephen's father?
I believe he was. I think he was a general contractor. Let me check my notes.
Yeah, I think maybe. Yeah, go check your notes. Make sure.
Yeah. He was known at the hospital as a liar. I actually wrote down lair. He was a lair.
Lair, yeah. Lair, pants on fire.
Woohoo, dyslexia. All right.